Brahms's Lied von Shakespeare. It was sung by the women of the London Symphony Chorus with the horn players Frank Lloyd and Stephen Sterling, and Rachel Masters was playing the harp, and the conductor was Richard Hickox. This is BBC Radio 3. It's just after 3 o'clock. Time now for World Roots, and the first of two programmes recorded 2 years ago at a music festival in Morocco. Lucy Duran introduces highlights from the 2009 Gnawa and World Music Festival in Essaouira on Morocco's Atlantic coast.
This is the busy fishing port of Essaouira, a stone town on the Atlantic coast of Morocco. The small harbour is packed with boats painted bright blue, and the incredible array of fish that they've brought in is attracting thousands of noisy seagulls. But there's another constant soundtrack to this town, which is the music of the Gnawa religious brotherhood that has its origins and traditions from across the Sahara to the south and brought to Morocco by slaves many centuries ago. Everywhere you go in this town, you hear the distinctive sound of Gnawa music. The deafening clatter of the giant metal castanets with their infectious interlocking rhythms, and the deep bass sound of the three-string lute, the gimbri. This weekend, Essaouira celebrates its Gnawa and World Music Festival, bringing in huge crowds from all over the country and further afield. And World Roots is here to record some of the best artists in this festival, and to try and capture the special, magical spirit that the Gnawa tradition brings to Essaouira.
Allahum salli ala Rasulullah, ya jan ya mula Muhammad.
The Gnawa festival attracts Gnawa Malem, or masters, from across Morocco. There are 22 Malems here this year, including this one, Raouf Bekari, who leads his own group, Agadir Gnawa. One of the aims of the festival is to try and broaden the appeal of Gnawa by putting on fusion concerts with international musicians. And later on, we'll hear this same group, Agadir Gnawa, improvising with the New Orleans band Congo Nation. The festival has 9 venues, ranging from the main stages, which attract audiences of tens of thousands, right down to the intimate Dar Souiri, the venue for Agadir Gnawa's performance. So here they are, first of all, Unfused, starting off a midnight concert on the opening night of the festival, Agadir Gnawa.
Ya Rasulullah,
This is a really beautiful romantic spot and a very favourite spot here in Essaouira. We're on the terrace of a lovely old riad, I guess it's a riad.
Yes.
Called Villa Maroc. It's, I'm told, it's one of the first hotels that really established the reputation of this town of Essaouira. And we're looking out across the bay. It's a very hot and still day with the blue sea in front of us. And I'm here on this lovely terrace with the producer and the director of the Essaouira Festival, and her name is Nela Tazi. So, Nela, it's a festival that has an enormous reputation outside Morocco.
Yes, Essaouira is a beautiful town, and there are different festivals during the year. But the Gnawa and World Music Festival is the most important one, with more than 400,000 people attending the festival during four days.
400,000 people?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Like the concert we had yesterday, 100,000 people attended the concert.
I was one of them, and I was stuck in the crowd at one moment. I mean, I just could not move. It was so packed. Because the other thing that one has to say is that it's a free festival.
Yes.
Which does make it different from something like the Sacred Music Festival at Fez, where it's all cordoned off and you have to pay to get
in. Yes. Well, actually, this festival was the first popular festival in Morocco with free access to the concerts. And this project brought some major changes in our country in terms of music and also socially and politically. And now in Morocco, you have many festivals in different towns around the country. But the Gnawa Festival obviously is very special because the Gnawa masters are the heart of this festival, the soul of this festival. And they're a major phenomenon, cultural phenomenon here in the town of Essaouira. They're part of this town, of the culture of the town, of the city. And you can feel it. It's really something. There's a real harmony between the city and the culture of Gnawa.
It's amazing. Walking around the streets, you just hear Gnawa music everywhere. You hear it coming out of stalls. You hear, last night, 5 a.m, I heard people singing Gnawa songs in the streets, walking through the back streets of the Medina. I mean, it really is the soundscape of this town.
Yes, and all the shops, and you have many music shops, and everybody plays Gnawa, everybody sings Gnawa. It's really impressive to see a crowd of like 40,000 people and everybody knows the songs by heart and everybody sings with the musicians and everybody knows the music. So you can feel it. It's really a local tradition that is very strong. And also it's very, very spiritual. The fact that this music is so spiritual brings everybody together in a very, very special mood, and it's a really peaceful mood.
Because it's music for healing originally.
Exactly.
It's music to connect with the spirit world.
The rhythms are very repetitive, so it's really trance music. And this is what makes it so interesting, and it gives so many possibilities in terms of fusion and mixing with other kinds of music.
Nela, I mean, you say that 40,000 people are out there singing the songs of Ganawa and so on, but presumably a decade ago, two decades ago, this was very marginalized music because it's music that was born out of slavery, and it was the music of the black population who were marginalized as former slaves or as the descendants of slaves. So there must have been a transformation of the status of Ganawa music.
Yes, there's been a huge transformation because Ganawa were considered as a minority. And also because their art is at the crossroads between some African rituals that is a heritage from the ancient slaves and Islamic traditions. So it wasn't really recognized as something...
Orthodox.
Exactly.
A bit unorthodox.
Exactly, that's exactly the word. So with this festival, it's like a success story, if I can say so, because it's the recognition of a minority that has emerged. And this is something very important in the mentalities for Moroccans in general, to see that this is possible. So if it's possible for them, it's possible for others. And because it's part of our culture and also our spirituality, it brought so many people together in so much harmony between social classes, between Moroccans in general. And also it gave such a good image of who we are as Moroccans to the rest of the world.
Multiracial,
exactly.
Tolerant.
Exactly.
But is it really true? Yes. Does it go beyond just the festival?
Yes.
Nela?
This is very important for us as a Muslim country working on some major changes on our way to democracy and modernity and all the values that are so important for us. And I think that what's really magical with this festival, it is that it really shows what Morocco is, a very tolerant country, an open country, a country of peace, a country that welcomes any culture, a country that is really open.
سيداتي وساداتي أحسن رئيس في العالم وفي الفن الأمازيغي اليوم هنا بمدينة الصويرة وبمهرجان الصويرة 2009 إبراهيم أسلي
That's the sound of 100,000 Moroccans, and quite a number of them have turned out specially to hear a local star of a different kind of music, the popular music of the Berber or Amazigh people. The master singers of the Berbers are called Ruais, and this is Ruais Brahim Asli. His band has a gimbri as its bass instrument, but it's led by a fretless banjo with electric guitar and the rabab, a one-string fiddle, and a huge percussion section, including a drum kit, a bendir, and a darbuka. You're in for something special. This is Ruais Brahim Asli.
يسق سنا يسق سقيس لخيرا وينو نحكر يسق سرها نسق سما يجرانا ويان في غسق سنا يسق سقيس لخيرا جينا دهر يسق سنا نسق سما يجرانا سقساقيت عن سقساقي قفر بي غريق تريد وربوت له غوال وربوت له الحب نقفر غوال ناغي غاق تريد نغذي كوال الأخبار هو اللي بدأك فعول غي سور تريد يهدوه ين أذقاني نتاقوه ين روحي غغور تريد
I'm
جان تيتون افتنا غرفت دي سريتا حجي انا قهريرين غذتنا عرفت زرينا سمعت ونتيات صبر غرده كان نظرة سياد ما من
Oh.
والسنغال
Backstage now at the Bab Marrakesh, which is the main festival stage, with Brahim Asli.
Yeah.
He's a musician who comes not far from here, from Essaouira.
Oui, bon, je suis original de la région de Essaouira, pas loin.
I am originally from the region of Essaouira. My parents are from the countryside, 30 kilometers from here. But nowadays I live in Agadir.
Mais moi je vis à Agadir quand même.
And so your music, it's, well, in English we would probably say Berber music, but I think you say Amazigh, is that right?
Yeah, bah, c'est Berber, Amazigh.
Amazigh and Berber, it's the same thing. Berber and Amazigh music are instantly recognizable. It's unlike anything in the whole world. Me, Ibrahim Asli, and my band, we play Amazigh music using modern instruments like guitar, keyboard, and drums, alongside our traditional instruments such as the rabab, the lutar, and the tamtam. I mix them together, and it's still 100% Amazigh music.
100%.
So, how strong is Amazigh culture in this part of Morocco, around Essaouira? Is it very important?
Oui, bah, bien sûr, dans tout le Maroc, peut-être.
Of course, Amazigh culture is all over Morocco. This is a festival of Gnawa music. But there is Gnawa in Berber music too. The influence is there. And there is much more than that in the festival. There is also Berber music, Arabic music, and French music. The audience here in Essaouira really appreciate the diversity of the different musical languages of the world.
And your public obviously loves you.
Well, I thank the public. And the public knows me well because of my films. When I record an album, I make a film of it with its own scenario. So my public can actually see what it hears. The films are based on the stories in my songs.
So what are your songs about, Brahim?
In my songs, I speak about many things. For example, about love. Because in every scenario, in every story, love is what matters. This is what I have decided to present in my films and in my songs, because love is difficult here. In our religion and our Amazigh culture, many people, especially in the countryside, don't perceive love as a natural thing, as a gift from God. So we always have some little problems. This is what I sing about. Problems facing girls and boys, men, women, who should have the right to marry whoever they like. They have the right to open their hearts to each other, to get to know each other, and then later comes marriage. Parents here, mothers and fathers, they focus too much on their children. For example, if a girl wants to marry the one she loves, her parents will interfere immediately and will start objecting about his family, his region, and so on. But people should be allowed to marry whoever they want.
Brahim, the first piece that you played tonight lasted nearly 1 hour, and it was just one piece. Are your songs usually this long?
No, actually, each song lasts 7 or 8 minutes. But I move straight from one song to the next, and they all flow into one. But there are 8 songs there. Sometimes we change the rhythm, but we don't stop the music. We want to keep the audience hotted up. So we've chosen a sequence of songs that are all in the same Shabi rhythm. Shabi is our word for popular song. So this is Amazigh popular music.
I'm gonna make you mine.
بيك نتمون وهي تصريفية نغنيك نجمع وراه وسيدي تهيدية هنيش قسل ذهب تهنى تجليدية وريبك نادك نحق تهنى تحضيضية كيوت ربي غرسنا حبها تسريدية قدم ضيبك انا حرق ضبضيضي
One of the great moments last night here at the Essaouira Festival was a collaboration between a group called Congo Nation, who come from New Orleans, and a group called Agadir Ganawa, who are from Morocco. And I'm here with the leader of Congo Nation, whose name is Donald Harrison. So, Donald, why are you called Congo Nation?
We're called Congo Nation because we represent a place in New Orleans called Congo Square. There are cultural groups in New Orleans that represent different areas, and I have been privy to some of the rhythms that are really secret. There's only like three people who really know these rhythms right now, and they're protected.
You say there are very few people who know these secret rhythms. I mean, what? Who are these people? How do only a few people have this special knowledge?
A lot of people know the rhythms, but only a few people know why, the who, what, when, and where, because it has to be protected.
So protected in what way? You mean because they're not going to survive? Because these rhythms
will not
disappear?
Because they need to be pristine. And there are many people who take things and then use them in a manner that is not pristine.
Are they sacred rhythms?
They can be.
It sounds very, very obscure.
Yeah. That's what secrets are.
Well, that must have some resonance with the Ganawa tradition, which is also secret and sacred.
We can say this, Afro-New Orleans culture and Ganawan culture have similarities because both entities came from West Africa and were enslaved in different parts of the world and were able to retain certain aspects of their African heritage, their roots, and then transcend and make something new out of them while the roots were still retained. So you have something different in New Orleans. That's why I say Afro-New Orleans culture. It's very influenced by African culture, but it's different. There's other influences in there now. And I can hear the same thing with Ganawan music. They have their own style now, but you know where it came from.
So here you are at the festival, at the Essaouira Festival, and one of the things that happens at this festival is sort of musical encounters. And your encounter with this group, Agadir Ganawa, was obviously a great moment in the festival, much anticipated moment. Had you rehearsed with them at all?
No, we hadn't rehearsed with them before. We had a brief encounter with some other Ganawan musicians. So maybe that helped to set the tone, but I think the thing that set the tone is that, as I said before, we have similar roots, similar outcomes, and the rhythms are the same, just different accents. And sense of spirituality in what we do, and that our participants have lived a lifetime in our culture, and their participants have lived a lifetime in the culture. So when you have people that have done it that long and understand similar backgrounds, I think it transcends to something else. When you have all those things coming together.
But essentially, the Ganawa group provides the framework. So basically you are kind of slotting into their music.
It was mostly Ganawans providing a framework. Sometimes we played our music with them, and sometimes we played their rhythms. And then a few times we played our music, and they came in. So they understood what we were doing, and we understood what they were doing.
Without having a language in common.
No, because we couldn't speak to each other. We could only play music.
So you had the musical
and
language.
Look at each other and go.
Hand on heart.
Because you know. That's
a sense of brotherhood.
We're bonded. So that's what that means.
And so were there moments in this collaboration where, you know, you were suddenly really inspired and started playing things that you had no idea you even had in you, or?
Yeah, that tends to happen a lot. So, but it did happen last night, and then this music can be transcendental. So I feel like we reached that plateau.
Because the music is actually Ganawa music, as I'm sure you know, is music that originally is intended to bring down the spirits so that they can possess people who need to be healed.
And our music is about transcending out of the life that you're in. to be healed in another place.
Yeah.
Agadir Ganawa with Congo Nation, recorded at the Dar Suwiri on the opening night of the 2009 Essaouira Ganawa and World Music Festival. It was an improvised piece that certainly supports Donald Harrison's strong sense of a common ancestry between Ganawa and the blues. Now let's hear the final part of this cross-cultural jam session within the old stone walls of Dar Suwiri. Agadir Ganawa with Congo Nation.
Woman, holler, the little pet,
Morocco's Agadir Gnawa with American band Congo Nation, recorded at the 2009 Gnawa and World Music Festival in Essaouira on Morocco's Atlantic coast. And as Lucy Duran said, there'll be more from the festival in World Roots next week.
The 2011 BBC Proms. The world's greatest classical music festival returns from Friday the 15th of July to Saturday the 10th of September. For full details of the season, go online to bbc.co.uk/proms or consult the BBC Proms Guide, available now.
Well, in an hour's time, jazz record requests with Jeffrey Smith. And then at six, we go live to the Metropolitan Opera in New York for a performance of Berg's Wozzeck, conducted by James Levine. Wozzeck will be sung by Alan Held and Marie by Waltraut Meyer. That's 6 o'clock this evening, live from the Met. But now it's just after four and time for Jazz Library, which this week focuses on one of the great New Orleans piano players. Here's Alan Shipton.
Today, the subject of Jazz Library is a man who would have been 100 years old this very day, Alton Pennell, the pianist from New Orleans. And to join me and talk about the music of Alton Pennell, selecting some of his best recordings, once again, it's Mike Poynton joining me on Jazz Library. Mike, welcome to the programme. Let's just try and place Alton. I mean, very much a pianist who is seen as central to the New Orleans revival.
He really was, and he was an ideal band pianist. He always said, my role is to be a band pianist. He wasn't really a soloist, but he could turn out good solos. But a fine heart of the rhythm section man, and the rhythm section that he was part of has been considered by many to be one of the best rhythm sections in jazz.
Well, in a moment, we're going to hear his very first recordings with Bunk Johnson's band in 1945. I mean, this was a very significant band for particularly Europeans who got hold of the records that they made and discovered a rather different approach to New Orleans jazz. But I think you've done some digging in New Orleans and discovered that the band did quite a bit in this form before it got to New York.
They were a group led by George Lewis in New Orleans, basically, and then Bunk was rediscovered and was the star and the central part of the whole revival. But Alton always said it was George's group in the beginning and it was George's group after Bunk.
So what we're going to hear then is effectively the George Lewis band with Jim Robinson on trombone, Lawrence Morero banjo, Baby Dodds at this point on drums, and Slow Drag Pavager, wonderful name, on the bass.
Wonderful Slow Drag. They had done some very fine recordings for Bill Russell in New Orleans with no piano, but Bunk thought they must have a piano to go to New York with. So George was given the task to find a pianist. And I believe Alton was one of the first he thought of.
Tishomingo Blues, the Spencer Williams composition, played by Bunk Johnson and his New Orleans band, originally on Decca and now out from the Austrian Document label on the complete Decca's Victors and V-discs from 1945 to 1946 by the Bunk Johnson band. Well, Mike, we're very fortunate, really, because live recording, location recording, despite the Benny Goodman Carnegie Hall concert from 1938, was still really in its infancy in the mid-40s. And this band was, very fortunately, recorded by V-Disc. We should say this is at the end of the recording ban, so lots of groups weren't being recorded at all in 1944-45.
True.
And suddenly we hear a live session by the Bunk Johnson Band. And this always reminds me of the fact the band was there for dancing. Those tempi were exactly right for playing in the cavernous spaces of the Stuyvesant Casino.
Yes, which was an old Jewish wedding hall in a remote part of New York, Lower East Side or something. And a lot of the young people went to this thing. It was an attraction for them to see this older style of jazz. And there were good write-ups in Time magazine and things like that, so they really were quite a sensation.
Yes, I think the thing was that New York was looking for anything at the end of the war that was going to cheer people up and make them see things differently, and certainly Bunk rode that little wave for a while. It's also kind of interesting to think that that same week, V-Disc were recording Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker out on the West Coast with Bubbles Whitman doing their live appearance on the radio there. And you just get this impression that V-Disc were purveying American culture in all its forms to the troops.
Oh, they did a wonderful job. I mean, everything from Louis Jordan, Cab Calloway, singers of other kinds. It was a wonderful label, I'm sure, you know.
And do you feel, I mean, certainly you get it from the announcer at the beginning, but I get the feeling here, much more than on the studio sessions, that the band has got that ebb and flow with an audience. You can really get the sense that they are interacting with the public.
Yes, it's really relaxed. You get the lovely relaxed beat settling down more, even though I'm afraid shortly after dissension was setting in the band. Really.
Well, already had, in the sense that Baby Dodds had packed up his drums and fled, and now yeah. Red Jones is playing drums. He's nothing like Baby Dodds as a drummer, not in the same league at all.
Now, Art Hodes had recommended him, and after that, Kaiser Marshall came into the band from the old Fletcher Henderson lineup. But there were problems, and Bunk, I'm afraid, referred to them all as emergency musicians because they weren't the kind of readers that he was. In fact, some of them couldn't read at all.
This is the Stuyvesant Casino in New York, where Bunk Johnson's New Orleans band is recording for V-Discs. Thank you.
live recording of the Bunk Johnson New Orleans Jazz Band playing at the Stuyvesant Casino in New York in January 1946. The lineup the same as the original recording group, except that Red Jones has taken the place of Baby Dodds on drums. And full details of the personnel of all the music in all the tracks on today's programme can be found on the Jazz Library website. That's bbc.co.uk/radio3/jazzlibrary. And on the occasion of the 100th birthday of the pianist Alton Pennell, I'm joined by Mike Poynton to look at the best recordings that he made. Now, you said, Mike, that the Bunk Johnson Band really was the George Lewis Band with Bunk added on trumpet, and then afterwards they went back to New Orleans and became the George Lewis Band again. Now, the first version of the band that really made any significant recordings has an otherwise relatively unknown trumpeter, Elmer Cuckoo Talbot, on trumpet, immortalised more in my memory by the fantastically atmospheric photographs that Stanley Kubrick, then a photographer for Time and Life magazines, took of the band. And they are some of the best jazz photography I've ever seen. I mean, Kubrick had an eye for somehow getting the atmosphere of this band on paper.
He really did. And I'm told that he preferred that sort of music to the ones he'd been sent to New Orleans to document, including Sharky Banana, in other words, some of the white bands. And Look magazine was the key mag in this particular instance. And many years later, Barry Martin dropped him a line, and of course he was nearly always incommunicado, but he sent a signed note back to give Barry permission to use those pictures, which says a lot, I think.
Some of them are included on the GHB Jazzology / American Music reissue of the famous 1950 jam session. I think, Mike, when you and I were growing up, this was going the rounds as a bootleg LP in incredibly poor quality.